This is Moss Whelan and Story in Mind. And this is a series, a mini series, on the hero's journey and using it, subverting it, inverting it in order to get inspiration, not be locked into the mono part of it. One of the main points, I too would say it's the focal point of the thesis that is The Hero with a Thousand Faces, the book, a scholarly work. You know, probably originally it was a paper, like a essay. It is about enlightenment, transformation, transcendence, and sort of seeing these into the, sort of the key of these, of a group of myths, classical myths. And the stage that I'm looking at, I've recorded a couple times now, talking about subverting the meeting with the goddess slash the mother slash the anima. And it's presented in a positive sense, and there is a reference, as far as the inversion goes, for a female adventurer encountering the masculine. So there is that flip around happening as far as gender. There's this encountering with the animus, the male, the male gender, versus the male adventurer who's encountering the female archetype of the anima. So the inversion of this meeting right away. Number one, it doesn't happen. You know, that, you know, whatever the gender archetype is, it's not available. It's on vacation. There's a busy signal. Or you show up at the, you've been invited and everything, and you show up at the destination. Of course, this alien-esque mansion. And in the underworld or in the overworld, wherever the adventure is, sort of like a halfway point, and it's supposed to be, it's supposed to be this great thing. And into flipping things around, that it's like awful. Number one, they got schedules mixed up, and the goddess is on vacation. I'm just imagining a sort of scene of, you know, knocking on the door, kind of like the Wizard of Oz. Like, you get to the Emerald City, it's like knock, knock, knock. And, you know, instead of the door opening, it's sort of a speakeasy. And this small door opens, and it, you know, all the questions start. Who are you? What do you want? Getting ready to shoo everybody out, you know, hide whatever has to be hidden. in the sense of a speakeasy, which was Prohibition era, which was 100 plus years ago, when alcohol was verboten, forbidden. Okay, so I'm wondering, you know, if that's intentional, kind of one more test. I do like the idea of the adventurer, you know, gender unspecific, getting into the palace, temple, and, you know, yes, success getting in there, but finding it basically empty. Even if there was this kind of bodyguard or guards outside saying, no, you can't go in. You know, so just go around the back way and sneak into the kitchen, say. There's a kind of quality in that of theater that this has been staged, and then, you know, returning with this awful truth. Oh, you went to the underworld, and you were looking for the goddess, and, you know, so that you could defeat the such and such monster of so and so, and it would be tempting to kind of cover it up and not talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. Or inventing a story, much like the sailors, etc. You know, instead of just straight up realism, there's these tales of mermaid tales and islands that turned out to be monstrous whales and people who live, you know, in distant places. You know, they're sort of human, but then they're not human. Even in the sense of, say, seeming exactly the same, but behaving entirely different. There is a kind of quality of, you know, the meeting, or being late for the meeting, and maybe the gifts are left, the gifts from this mother goddess. You think, you know, well, just in case you manage to make it, you know, I was here on time. I really don't like it when people are late. Yours sincerely, MG, so mother goddess. As I've gone along, as I've seen other people in my family and getting older and seeing patterns and just even being aware that my parents had been children at one point, that's a huge thing. And there's the classic cliche of, you know, realizing that instead of, you know, omnipotent beings, that your parents are flawed human beings. And you know, initially, originally, that's not presented, but I like the notion of this encounter, this meeting with this deity, you know, this archetype of the feminine, or, you know, whatever archetype. I'm just imagining now an archetype of non-binary archetype, and, you know, having instead of the mother and then later the father, with this. Because the stages go, encounter with this goddess, then encounter with the temptress, then encounter with the masculine, and it ends that it's a negative. But to make to say alter that the gender relationship completely, so it's not, oh, we'll just flip it around and it's meeting with the father and it's a good thing, and instead go for, you know, this meeting with a being that doesn't, it's not interested in that. I suspect it's not that way because, say, we're projecting, you know, what is known, and where do people come from, right? What is the origin? That is a binary. I remember one person in my family clearly stated that that's where they're, you know, that's where they're at, that's where they're from. And myself, I'm sort of like going, oh, sure. Once I had found out that cis and trans are both science driven, right? That it's a statement. It's something, you know, that has long existed. It's not something, and so, I mean, it's not something that has just suddenly popped up. And initially, that's the way it came across. I was sort of going, oh, okay, so I am over here on this side, and that's what it means. It's like CIS. It's like, and then trans is the opposite side. So, potential there. Moss, I'm not interested in writing about that stuff. That's fine. This is more like, say, what can we do with this? Also, too, leading to questions of, well, why is it presented as such? And why go through that? It's something classical. There's a lot that's classical mythology, Greek, Roman, and the surrounding European Mediterranean. So, say, finding myself halfway across the world, you know, with not a Europe or Mediterranean in sight, you know, what does that have to do with me? I wanted to start off by saying, oh, you know, it's expansive, that there's a lot of stuff going on in the myths, and it's not so straightforward. Something along the lines of Achilles and his cousin, right? That they're not having you could sort of limit it and say that it's a homosocial relationship, like it's two men, but how I was reading it, receiving it, I was like going, wait a minute, this is definitely homosexual, right? There's something, or there's this intimacy, and I'd have to go back and read it for clarity. But just that it's not so cut and dry as one would think, and saying, well, this is, you know, definitely European. How do I mean that? Summing up and compartmentalizing and saying, oh, classical mythology. You know, well, that's not weird at all. That's not... it's cis, C-I-S. It's not, you know, there's nothing trans about it. Nothing on the other side. T-R-A-N-S. Okay. So inverting, subverting this meeting with the mother. It's weird. I think it's, for me, it's my own, say, situation. And what that means, and but also say the normality of it, and you know, everyone that we encounter has had a mother, and I remember one writer telling me they had a story about I think it's parthenogenesis, something like that, where and I know that, say, it exists in nature, that there's, I think it's shellfish, who are, it's, there is, you know, females, and they don't require a mate. And it's very interesting article reading about how they had started in one area, and just say the getting to other parts of the world. I think it was along the lines of the ballast tankers taking on water from one area. I know it was that happened with jellyfish. It was something along the same lines for these shellfish, a kind of lobster, something like that. I do like the notion of it's a great thing, but we're not prepared for the mind-blowing reality of it, however you want to receive that. That, you know, the mother, when we encounter the, you know, the goddess, that it's not, you know, say, what we're thinking. You know, when I'm thinking of mother, I have this very specific idea. You know, it's based upon my experience, and you know, my experience, encounters, and and at the same time, I'm going, you know, but it's not, you know, this is something beyond comprehension. So what would that look like if you can't comprehend something? So you have this meeting, and there is reference in, I think it was the Iliad, so that's with Achilles, but say deities disguising themselves, because if mortals saw them without the disguise, that would destroy the mortal. You know, that the deities were so complicated and so difficult to comprehend that it, you know, destroyed the a human being. And in a sense, vice versa. That's one thing I've walked away from thinking about the supernatural is, you know, say that, you know, we create it, and say that there is this reliance on human beings. So destroying the mind of the human being is destroying the also destroying the deity. So there'd have to be this kind of restraint and conformation, maybe, creating a situation, creating a form that is not going to, or it could be something along the lines of a blackout, and you need a fuse replaced after this encounter. It's an interesting idea of accidentally being exposed. I'm thinking of Eros and Psyche. But, you know, in a nutshell, it's a kind of Beauty and the Beast situation. And wanting to see, you know, that the curiosity overwhelms. There's this warning, you know, don't look at me. You know, everything is provided, comfort, you know, lavish luxury, but with this warning. That's a kind of Bluebeard thing, actually. You know, all this is yours, except for that one door. Don't go in that room. And doing so, I'll almost say, you know, looking beneath the mask, or maybe asking, it's like, why, oh deity, why, oh supernatural creature, are you wearing a mask? You know, well, if I didn't, you know, you you would cease to exist, or vice versa. You know, you wouldn't be able to handle it. And this brings me around to eternity, right? This quest for the notion of contemplation on, and to, you know, say, set off on that journey, head for eternity, say, the experience to know it. There's also a longing for that it's not enough to exist in the world. That there's this, you know, desire for this experience, which is an odd thing because usually it's flipped around. Desire, sort of, oh well, wanting earthly things and so on and so forth. Sounds like it's time to change streets, go up to the other street. So why would that be important to the adventurer? Why is it, or rather, the underpinnings? Why is it important if we're saying, oh, well, this is the subconscious, right? That these myths, this storytelling, it's, and to this specific type of storytelling is relating this transcendent experience. Why go through that effort? Is it that the gift is, and two, there's something to flip around, that the gift is not a gift. I almost think that, say, you know, you bring back the gift, the adventurer brings back the gift, turns around and goes, well, I've got the gift. I don't need to finish the adventure, and heads off home. Or, you know, is like, say, led astray, but say ends up with the gift and, you know, on the high seas, encountered by other adventurers who seek to, you know, continue. That would be an interesting way to do the, you know, to say, parse the myth, that it's a series of failures that other adventurers pick up and then fail. You know, so yes, an adventurer takes up the reins and, I think it was Supernatural Aid and Allies before this. But just to say that there was this failure before, and, you know, the adventurer who goes and sees the goddess, the Eternal Mother, who is there at the binding of the world. It's almost like encountering this pantheon going through the hero's journey. But so we encounter, let's say we encounter the adventurer, like each chapter. So we have 17 chapters, and we are at this chapter that the new adventurer is set up saying, look, all you have to do is get the gift. Just pick up the gift and deliver it to the next adventurer. Maybe not said as much. You know, it's just, you don't have to worry about the beginning part. That's already done, right? You just have to go and get the gift. And so the adventurer sets off and, you know, ends up at this island. There's this port, and there's this bartender, basically. And, you know, approached, and doesn't want to give it up, right? It belongs to, and two, let's say this is a female arc, and these are female adventurers, and asking this female adventurer, hey, it's time to let it go, time to give up the gift. No, I'm not ready. Or, you know, never. It's, you know, it was entrusted to me. It's like, well, yeah, but you didn't finish the quest. You didn't finish the adventure. So it's been handed over to me. And it would take a long time. Maybe as well, they would say, okay, well, I'll go with you, right? That, you know, is it in a way that they've become the gift? Like, it's impossible for them to let it go. And so they set aside where they are and what they're doing, and, you know, the peace that they've known. I'm imagining too, a community, a family, friends, and once again that stability. You know, that's an inversion that, say, it keeps it. You're still doing the arc. You're still doing this three-act structure. But at each point, setting it up that there's this failure and this growing group. So eventually, also, people would be passing away. It could even be, say, showing up on this island and having to find the gift, from the goddess, that it's been hidden, or say that the family protects it now. But eventually we end up with these, you know, this 17 characters. And a few of them survive. And some of them die of natural causes, old age, sickness, disease, or situation. Somebody has the gift and then gets, say, captured, and then the gift goes to other hands, and it's kind of like a bit of detective work. You have to go around and interview various people and, you know, okay, well, who did this robbery? And eventually, you know, finding out who has the gift. I'd like the notion too of it being, oh, and that in a sense that they've been transformed by possessing it, and now they see it as, you know, that they've got to make amends, so they're going to go on the adventure quest as well, now that they know the whole story. This weird kind of invitation, open door to transcendence. Moss, what are you talking about? It's kind of wiping out of consciousness for a brief time, and then a return, so that you get your experience of eternity going, oh yes, okay, this is what it is. But, you know, then, you know, you're back, you're in your mortal coil, you're raveled, you're not unraveled, you're raveled, and continue. Why should this be important? Well, it's the great leveler. It's the that's the hope, is that it's going to smooth, or at least get oneself to a kind of clarity. I do like going back. I do like, say, picking up these references that now make sense to me, rather than before, where, say, struggling and not sure why. And too, it's good to speak of. It's good to sort of say these things. And be in the pursuit of oneness. So, and I just saw a show that really painted shamans, and to say, sort of more of a North European mystic kind of experience, but painting it in a pretty tragic light. And to also looking at, okay, and you could actually say that it was a bit of a horror show. And there's a science fiction kind of element to it. But also it has this representative representation of the shamanic, and gory, brutal, uncivilized, etc., etc., etc. Crazy. Crazy, murderous. So, the meeting. We've crossed the midpoint of this episode, so we're in the crisis. what if the meeting, like say the big bad flip around, the inversion, subversion would be a negation. You know, not just a masked meeting, not just something where there's this, there's been lots of tests before this, and the opposite of, say, for this situation would be this, not just, you know, the goddess not being there, it's just closed door, absolutely not, you know, you're not welcome here, you know, you're not pure as the driven snow, you know, you're not, I like the notion of, say, a very realistic, you know, instead of the knight in shining armor, you know, that armor is rusty, and to it's not a knight. you know, it's a corrupt individual. It's, you know, a beaten individual, broken down, and why do I like that? There's a sort of realistic brutality. I don't know about you, but going about, there is this quality of a kind of subservience. And I get it to a degree, but I would rather that the subservience be towards, I don't want to say the community, but I've said it, and then say writ large humanity. And why not community? I just had a run-in with someone, and it felt manipulative, and their style of communication, and the intention on both sides was supposed to be pleasant, but they came up against this wall, right? Say that I want to say representation. If I turned it around, it would be very much, say, you know, the mask of eternity, that we all wear these masks, and we conceal, you know, that spark within us all. And partially, I think that's what the brutality of the world is. It's like this crazed desire to unmask. So there's that. And jumping back to the the goddess encounter, that, you know, once again, we shouldn't, and to she, it won't, right? There's a definite door there. You know, this is not a mother, and this is beyond, and it has to be that way. And I just to suggest, it's like, instead of the classic cliche of you know, a mask of eternity, a gendered mask of eternity, why not have something like there is this glow, but it is behind these costumes, right? It is behind, I want to say masks, but say larger, that say, it's almost like scenes, tableaus, stained glass, that shift and turn. So the glow is always concealed. We can see it. We can see the glow, that there's some source of illumination rather than this human form. And so instead we have, here's a picture of, you know, of this expression of the eternal, and here's another expression of the eternal, and so on and so forth, the shifting, floating illustrations. Let's say even carvings, you know, say something that takes us back possibly even further. You know, written in stone, as it were. But just to get away from assuming, you know, say, you and I could have a conversation, and, you know, you might not understand what I'm talking about when I'm talking about oneness or transcendence or the eternal. And say, you know, someone farther down the road than me, that I'm not going to comprehend, you know, exactly. I'm thinking of it, say, that, you know, that they're existing in a kind of perpetual state, right? Of, you know, this sort of blissed out oneness. And you sort of try talking to them, and they're just, you know, they're not there, in a sense. And, you know, I'll tune in to, say, like, you know, videos. I'll watch videos of some kind of, some person who's talking about how to disconnect. It's interesting that it's turned in this direction. It makes sense, but it's also frustrating. So I'll have to listen to this episode and go, it's like, well, you know, oh, am I really, is this really what I'm wanting to do? And as I'm thinking, well, no, because we set out to subvert, to invert, and that is our closer to it. It's sort of, say, doing the same thing, but getting a bit beyond, and getting closer to masks of eternity. Okay. So we're getting to the end of the crisis and of this episode, and getting closer to the climax. Could we do the gift as, say, an experience that the adventurer themselves, that they shift, so it's not a physical. The physical gift seems like a representation. Say it's symbolic, rather than something that, like, say, a bit of information. You know, the gift becomes knowledge, wisdom. Something less tangible. If the ultimate, say, turn it upside down for this stage is not meeting. I just had this sort of thought of along the lines of this sort of queue of adventurers that fail, then they get this second chance, which goes along with tests and trials, but say, and to, you know, taking a heck of a long time. You know, this adventure is taking forever. But here's something that, say, the adventure reaches a certain point, and I do like that it's a masculine, and that the adventurer transforms. The adventurer, say, is in that castle domicile, but say they cease to have been what they were, and then they experience the feminine, but they also they've left, you know, their shell. They've left who they were, and say they find they, you know, they wake up and they're this glow surrounded by these kind of masks that obscure this swarm of masks. And so for a time at the stage existing within this place, the next stage of the Hero's Journey monomyth by Joseph Campbell is, I think it's Encounter with the Temptress, right? So it's temptation in different ways. And then, you know, vice versa. It can be a temptor, some kind of tempting person. But I'm sort of imagining the upheaval right away of, well, but you can't be a mother. And I've seen men, parents, siblings taking care, and you know, I've seen sort of like, say, that compassion, and it. There's a kind of quality of, you know, well, you can't be a true, right, a true parent, or what is a good parent? That kind of definition, that kind of sort of, there's a kind of ivory tower quality. And two, finding the weirdness of one's own situation, like, say, encountering other families who do things differently to the extreme, and with limitations in place. I'm just remembering the, you know, wonderfully compassionate same-sex couple that I have the honor and pleasure of knowing, who are foster parents and who are making sure to honor the culture that the kids are coming from. The difficulty too, like, say, of say defining, you know, okay, well, it goes along with say the, you know, bureaucracy and the, what is it, the best attempts bureaucracies. Attempting to sort of create, there's a kind of utopic ideal at work, and I remember having a conversation, an ongoing conversation with someone, and thinking that, you know, that they were sort of, we are of the same mind, and that, you know, finding that they were talking differently and moving in this other direction, and so I'm worried at this point, with about 10 minutes left, that, you know, I too am sort of slipping away from the main premise here, which is this kind of unmeeting, and our adventurer, and wanting to continue with, say, our adventurer reaches this point of becoming, in a sense, becoming each of the stages in their own way. So this meeting is rather a meeting with themselves, right? An aspect of themselves written into the background, written into the subconscious, you know, one of the many masks that they encounter along the way. As put in the work, this thesis, the Hero with a Thousand Faces. Climax-wise, could the gift be that of an experience of eternity? You know, that is the gift, you know, regardless of, you know, who or what is met. You know, this giant, you know, female insect, and you know, oh my gosh, the reality, alien insect, and you know, yes, the truth is revealed, I am your mother. A very sort of Darth Vader moment. No! It's weird, that moment in Star Wars, because it was quite a big deal at the time. But looking back on it, and sort of say other people, although I have seen reaction videos where people say, you know, they don't know about it, you know, and say, you know, somebody who's in the know says, you know, hey, sit down, let's watch this. And then they hit the second movie and, what? Oh my gosh. And, you know, where the villain is closer to home. I like the notion as well of, you know, here's beings that are not so confined by time. You know, they've orchestrated these events. They were there at the beginning. The Threshold Guardian was one of them. You know, now we have another. Supernatural agents work for them. They probably can't, or shouldn't, or won't, you know, leave their magical abode, you know, just because, you know, setting foot in the real world would just blow it apart. I'm just remembering typewriting this interview with Isis, the goddess, the Egyptian goddess. Somewhere there's a scream. What? Come on, it's ancient history. Get over it. But I mailed it. And too, I think I you know, just keep it for myself and not dwell on it. But I thought it was pretty good. And but the person who received it, it was just sort of like a shot in the dark. And, I had sent out other letters, and one was quite well received. So there's that difference there. There's that difference of opinion and so on and so forth. The upshot of it was that things had changed, and so these imaginary creatures were walking around Vancouver. And so there's, you know, there's this opportunity. So I interview Isis, Egyptian goddess, and you know, there's some creative moments that there's these flight of bluebirds flapping around, and that she's using these, or they're using her, for this communication. And let's see, anything else? It's along those lines. I can remember writing it, and too, it's from my perspective, but it's also tongue in cheek, and it's a bit flirty. But also there's this awareness of, this person is, there's this bizarre quality, right? It's like hanging out with a, you know, famous person, or this weird element of it, like say, of course we, you know, there are people who live in Vancouver who have achieve levels of fame. I was in a Zoom conversation with local fandom, and you know, et voila, there's this famous science fiction writer. And so there was a conversation, but there was also this restraint going on. There was this kind of unusual distance, and say I also made this relevant contribution to the conversation, but it was weird because I felt at the same time like, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, I'm being observed, right? There's other people here, and attempting to make connections. Like sort of say, you know, oh, it's just you and me, and no, and opening it up, but feeling the limitation. Awkwardness. And we have others. We have music people, and we have, and too, this is everywhere, you know, pretty much every small town has some, you know, some person who's done something. But just that there's an odd quality to it. And it's less on the famous person's side, and it's more on the awkwardness of the, as I'm saying this, I'm going, is that true? That something changes. And say how we are treating others, that's changes. We are in the presence of greatness. It's like, oh, I shouldn't be talking with you. I shouldn't know you. I'm not famous. I'm no one. And now I'm going off to somebody else. A guru, Ram Dass, you know, saying, you know, no, that's exactly where you want to be. You want to be, just be no one. But taking that to the ultimate of, well, what is that? To be no one. And thus, the adventure continues. Take care.